and welcome to Cancreer, home of Canada's queer media. And my name is Luke Smith.
Jake Nguyen.
I'm Sebastian.
And this week, we're taking some inspiration from the Queer Songbook Orchestra. Now, they actually performed as part of the Canada Scene series at the National Arts Centre located in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And they managed to get some great talents from across the country together. And what I really like about the Queer Songbook Orchestra, you may be familiar with them as they have performed in many cities across Canada, is that they get people to sort of present their concerts. So, for example, they would get a key queer community member or an activist or somebody who's known, for example, Mike Tewksbury.
Ooh,
Mark
okay.
Tewksbury mm-hmm. was at this event. And, for example, if he was hosting it, he would talk about songs that meant something to him when he was coming out and kind of the experiences had. And he would talk about how the songs related to experience. And then the Queer Songbook Orchestra would play that song.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all rearranged for the benefit of the orchestra. So I thought that was a really cool idea. So we're going to talk about why music and queer music relate so much to us as queer folk and also kind of the identity. It makes me think of Lady Gaga's song that was huge in like 2010, Born This Way. I mean, it really has. It is the
defining song. You actually had
song.
To struggle to remember the name of that song.
I was like, what is that thing
that
called?
I was like, that is weird.
Clearly, he's going to say Alejandro. Clearly.
I mean, Alejandro had the best music video, in my opinion.
Yes.
Judas. That was a pretty hot video as well.
Although, actually, something that was pointed out to me recently is Alejandro is just, it's a love song. Not a love song. It's a, because normally when you say love song, but something that's not music, it's just something that you dedicate. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We'll fix it in post. it was an appreciation from Lady Gaga to Ace of Base.
Ha! Huh.
Because if you listen to Alejandro, it sounds like it could be an Ace of Base song.
That is very
true.
But she
was a fan of Ace of Base and wanted to do something in their style.
So we actually, the first musician that kind of performed when we were able to go and attend it was Beverly Glenn Copeland. And my gosh, was that ever a phenomenal performance.
Tell us about the performance and the artist, please.
Beverly Glenn Copeland is an acclaimed singer-songwriter for children and adults. Started writing in like the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely phenomenal. Beverly Glenn Copeland is an openly trans man, mm-hmm. living most of the time in New Brunswick. And was writing music for Mr. Dress Up, Sesame Street, and Treehouse TV, as well as Shining Time Station. So has written an unbelievable amount of music over many, many years.
That's probably thousands of songs.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was funny because Beverly was struggling to remember what song was from when, and you know, he's like, it's this song from, I can't remember when, but it was the one I did. And one of the songs he played was Ever New, which we're going to play now. And after that, we're going to play Lesbians in the Forest by Carol Pope. Now, just as a heads up, Lesbians in the Forest does drop the F-bomb. I know, but it also is very reflective of that kind of punk rock lesbian music that was out at the scene. I think it's an appropriate song to play. And because this event really kind of spanned the Canadian queer culture and the Canadian queer cultural history really well.
Hmm.
And Lesbians in the Forest is also just an unbelievably fun song.
Okay.
So we'll be back after Beverly Glenn Copeland's Ever New and Carol Pope's Lesbians in the Forest.
Thank you. spring, the summer rain softly turn to sing again. Welcome the bud, the summer blooming flower. Welcome the child whose hand I hold.
Tofu dogs, maybe some dykes in a tent, we'll have some beer. We're lesbians in the forest. Let's go to the S&M tent and learn how to fisk. We can do whatever we want, 'cause this is a man-free zone. Except for the guys who empty the chains, we don't call them Johns. Here at the Michigan Women's Festival, we worship the goddess. We're lesbians in the forest. Everybody with a frightening body walk around naked. Why do women grow facial hair? Why do I have to look at that? No offense to anyone who's transitioning. There's my ex with her new girlfriend. Buddy, you are so much hotter. You're Ellen's ex, Katie's ex, Alicia's ex, Portia's ex, the Indigo's ex, Jody's ex, my ex, ex's ex. We're lesbians in the forest.
No X key score, this is a forest. Same set smorgasbord, a Greek chorus. I swore this would be a dinosaur weekend. Dyke beacon, hair Mohican. I diddle a woodland fairy, whittle my woody scary. Middle of me is hairy, middle of me is dairy. Nymphs, fairies, witches, not a cock in sight, 'cause sisters are doing themselves all night.
Yeah, lesbians in the forest.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to Cangri, home of Canada's queer media. That was Carol Pope's Lesbians in the Forest.
And before that?
Was Beverly Glenn Copeland's Ever New. Now, Carol Pope has won 3 Juno Awards and many, many, many other things. And that song was written to kind of make fun of the Michigan Women's Festival? Or the Minnesota Women's Festival? The very famous women-only music festival.
Lilith Fair?
No. Some other one. Michigan.
Okay.
Because there's Lilith Fair, and then there's this other one that no men are allowed in at all.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's quite famous.
I think there is a time and a place to have a women-only space. And when I heard about the music festival and I heard about the lineup, because it's still running, I think, or at least it only discontinued recently, if it did discontinue. I remember seeing the lineup and being like, I want to see that. And people were like, you can't go. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. Because, I mean, there are times where that makes sense. I'm for it. I dig it. What was she making fun of it for? Do you remember?
Well, it's like, you know, there's lesbians in the forest, menstruating on the trees, and there's a drum circle that's popped up, and if you're looking for beer, go look for the dykes in the tent, and just, like, really the cliche things that you're going to find.
Okay.
That, refusing to call the Johns, and they call them Janes, and
okay.
just the whole shebang. It's a very entertaining
song. Making fun of it in a way that plays honor to it.
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. I mean, Carol was saying that, you know, she had a great time, but also really enjoyed the idea of kind of making fun of it as well.
Lesbians in the Forest.
Absolutely, it's a good song, very catchy. Yeah. So, that was that song. Now, what I really liked about the event, and maybe you can kind of correct me if I'm wrong here, Jake, is that it wasn't all singing and dancing. There was a lot of spoken word pieces. So Gwen Benaway, who is a two-spirit trans poet of Anishinaabe and Métis descent, was talking a lot a bit about their transition and kind of the kind of experiences of that. And one of the things that really stuck out to me was she shared a story of being in bed with somebody and seeing the kind of shame and embarrassment of people when they discover that she is trans.
Right.
And not only having to be aware of your own body, but also being able to see them reacting to your body and then being able to hold that and counter that and be like, no, it's okay. When it's their reaction to your body and how that just would mess with your mind. It was very powerful. Very, very powerful piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of made me kind of think twice. And, you know, it was interesting because we have a mutual friend of ours who is trans-identified. And they posted on Facebook of a song with a very similar experience.
Okay.
And a whole bunch of people were like, yes, this is my life! Because apparently it's a common experience amongst trans people to have your body shamed in front of you by people who are intimate and then have to just live with that and deal with it without looking like you deal with it because you don't want them to freak out because then you won't be into them. It's not good. I have many expletive words I could use here.
I think it sounds like something many people go through, but times 100.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think the intensity is really, like, the unique experience that you and I do not have privy to in a good way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And could never really raise a glass to either, which is good.
I think the format of the show was really interesting as well. As Luke mentioned before, it wasn't just singing and dancing. That wasn't any dancing. But it was more variety, and it was more focused on the queer perspective. I mean, from what I have learned from the show was that there was a whole other side of trans experience that I was completely oblivious to because, you know, as a cisgendered gay man, you know, usually there are sides of the queer community that you are not aware of or you're not, I guess, especially sensitive to.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, queer gay men are probably the majority of the queer community. So, I mean, it is good for the queer community to have something like this to actually showcase those unique experiences in the sense of in the format of performance art.
Yeah,
you know what I thought was great was that they also had Stephen Jackman Tokoff and Mark Tewksbury speaking as well, and they talked about.
Who are those people? Just in case there's people listening who don't
know
everything.
So Mark Tewksbury won the 100-meter gold backstroke at the Barcelona Olympic Games in 1992.
He was the first openly gay medal winner. Who was openly gay when they put the medal on him?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people come out after, but yeah, he was the only one. Well, he was the first to come out, to be out when they put the medal on him.
And it was a huge deal. And it was also the same year that Stephen Jackman Tokoff was born. And Stephen's an actor, a poet, an activist, and a Pisces. That came up in the conversation. But what was really interesting is that they were speaking to their experiences. And we heard stories of racialized folks, of the lived experiences of indigenous folks, the lived experience of people who are trans, people who are gender non-conforming, and also like Mark Tewksbury being like, I was a gay man, and in 92 you could not be a gay man at the Olympic level sport.
Yeah.
And kind of, I was just so impressed between the stories from Carol Pope and you know, everybody else, and Lorraine Segato was also there, she was in the Parachute Club, talking about how they wrote songs to reflect the AIDS epidemic, and all of this came together to kind of really paint a comprehensive mosaic of Canadian queer culture in 2 hours or less.
Okay.
It was really quite fascinating. So the question I have, moving away from what happened at this event, and it will be touring, so check out major cities in your area, such as Vancouver, Toronto, and maybe out east, I think they're fond of out east as well, to see if they come and swing by. But the big part of this is they kept talking to songs that had a real significance to them.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that we cling to queer songs such as Born This Way by Lady Gaga?
Yeah.
Why do they have this kind of central role in our community?
Is that the question?
Yeah.
All right. Well, oh man, there's someone, I cannot remember who, musicologist, I think, who said that music is the soundtrack to our lives. And it's partly the way that cinema and film have affected how we perceive reality, that when there are dramatic or key moments in our lives, sometimes when we think back, we put a soundtrack to it. And sometimes that soundtrack makes sense because it was playing in the background. Sometimes it was something that happened afterwards where there was music playing while you were trying to deal with it, or that you turned to certain music in order to deal with something. Noting that you can also deal with something that's positive, like something really good happened, and later on when you're mulling it over, there's music in the background. Or it could be that just there's lyrics that thematically remind you of an event that happened. And so just sort of the way that we approach our own lives and we approach our own narratives, we tend to attach music to it as being a way of sort of making things emotionally available to us. How's that for an answer?
That's a very good answer. Do you have anything to add to it, Jake?
I would say, from my point of view, it could just be a habit or cognitive, because sometimes I'm one of those people who always go out with a headphone, and it's kind of dependent on the mood. So sometimes music kind of send or encodes subliminal messages, and you know, when you're feeling sad or emotional or something going on in your life, you kind of just encode it by have like a way of being aware of your background. So music is one of those things. So I think just sometimes having a bad moment or a bad time in your life attached to certain songs or certain melodies or lyrics, that's just how emotion works and how we kind of manage our emotion by sending it into another form of art or perception.
When I was younger, I had a CD player at home. Actually, it's still with me, and I'm maybe early teens, and I would listen to a Power Driving Ballads, like 2 CD set, and it was like the 80s classics, like Foreigner,
and White Snake, and Meatloaf,
absolutely,
and, yeah, okay.
Like the whole
Here I go again on my own.
That kind of thing, yeah. Absolutely. And there were some songs that would remind me of books, because I would read certain books, like the Fire Song Trilogy or the L'Oreal Trilogy, with that album playing. And so now if I hear, like, random 80s music... I sometimes get reminded of teenage fantasy novels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of that kind of bizarre association that's happened.
I used to listen to Handel's Water Music every time I played this one video game, but it was like a Space Commander, I think is what it was called. And you're just like flying around in a spaceship, shooting other spaceships. And I just, for some reason, I just think of like this, you know, 16th century chamber music every time I fly around. Or every time I hear that song, I think of flying around in a spaceship.
I like it.
Somehow.
And it doesn't make any sense. It just, you know, what happens.
It just happened, yeah.
Connected. So Alanis Morissette's Hand in My Pocket, like I mentioned, was a pivotal song related to the experiences of Gwen Benaway. We'll hear that. And after that, we're going to hear Rise Up by the Parachute Club. Now, we actually had a really cool story from Lorraine Segato about Rise Up and kind of what that's come to mean. And what Lorraine was saying is that people email her even now, you know, 30 odd years later,
mm-hmm.
About what that song means to them and what right. Rise Up meant to them. And she said that every time she plays that song, she honors those stories.
Right,
She plays it because she knows that it means something
to a lot of people,
absolutely. Yeah. So we're going to play Alanis Morissette's Hand in My Pocket. And after that, Rise Up by the Parachute Club, here on Ken Queer.
Cause I've got one hand in my pocket.
welcome back to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
Jake.
And we have been talking about how certain songs become so intrinsically connected to experiences or to moments in our lives. And I think that the song to moment in life connection was really a big key element of this whole event. Now, Jake.
Yes.
What song did you choose to represent kind of connecting to your life?
Just for like context, he just ambushed me out on the balcony and be like, "Hey, what song you connected to?" And I was like, "Oh, Try Honesty by Billy Talent."
Oh yes.
Have you heard any song by Billy Talent?
I've heard half of quite a few songs from Billy Talent.
Have you heard Try Honesty?
Is half of as much as you can get through? Or?
It's if you're not an angry teenager, I don't think you can understand
it. Yes, yeah. That's exactly what I'm getting at. So
now, if you did not grow up with Rage Against the Machine, and you try to listen to Rage Against the Machine as an adult, there's going to be a lot of, I'm not sure what I'm listening to.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, I mean, every generation has that.
Yeah,
that sound.
And that kind of sound also is my song choice, which was... Oh, no, I changed it. Originally, my song was going to be Boulevard of Broken Dreams by Green Day.
That's my second song.
And the reason why I chose that one is because around the time it came out, I also came out, but I also moved to Winnipeg.
Uh-huh.
So I was having an international move. I was coming out.
I mean, everyone feels...
From the UK. And okay, it was right. Like, so you lose all of your connections.
Everyone feels that way when they move to Winnipeg.
Like, even more so than just changing high school. Like, it's... So the Boulevard of Broken Dreams, like, lyrically was very kind of on point for me. Although I didn't opt for it as the song of choice for today. But we're going to jump in with Billy Talent's Try Honesty, because you know what this show needs? A little bit of teenage angst.
Uh-huh.
That's what we need right now, and we'll be back just after this.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to Cannes Queer, home of Canvas of Queer Media. That was Try Honesty by Billy Talent, a nice angsty song which kind of captures Jake's youth.
Why did you
pick that one in particular?
It's a song that I still have on my iPod, and it's one of those songs that how many times I listen to it, I can literally just spit out all the lyrics right now. Okay. But it's just like, you just don't get bored of it, and it's, for some reason, I just can't get rid of it, because it's kind of the only Billy Talent song that was like angsty and lyrically relatable, I suppose, for me. Because Billy Talent was actually, I mean, when you hear Billy Talent, it sounds like something like why teenage angsty emo boys would listen to at the age of 15, like back in the 2000s. I was an Asian boy living in like a gay closeted space who should probably not listen to Billy Talent out loud because people would pick on me. But I listened to it anyway as like a rebel thing. And I just kept on listening to it. And then I guess because I was like homosexual and closeted at the same time. So it's connected to me. So whenever I get angry at someone or get picked on or bullied, I would just turn on a song or something. I used to have this log on my house back in the days. And because we were supposed to like build it into a pillar, but no one ever finished it, we ended up just putting it there. So we have an axe and a few blades because, you know, Asians, we love our blade weapons. So I just put the song on speaker and get all my teenage angst out with a bunch of blade weapons and a huge lock.
Okay. Trying to smash it open?
No, just try to, I don't know, cut it, slice it, I don't know.
Okay.
Teenage angst.
Okay.
Imagine you with a blade weapon and someone you hate, like AG.
You can pay to do that now.
Yeah.
There are axe throwing places where you can throw axes at a wall and pay for the pleasure of doing so. So I can see why that would be therapeutic.
There's a place somewhere, I can't remember if it's in Ottawa, where you pay $20 and they put you in like a room and you give your baseball bat and a bunch of other destructive weapons.
Mm-hmm. And you just smash things.
And you just smash things for an hour.
So, Sebastian.
Yes.
I think my story is very quick.
Okay.
The song I chose.
You go.
So
we'll
go with mine. I chose Camera Chameleon by Boy George and the Culture Club.
Because you're basic and obvious.
Because I'm very basic and obvious. Well, it's more because there's a lot of songs related to books I read or, you know, The Vacation Here or this and that, but not really any one song, which isn't teenage and angsty, related to my coming out. But Boy George's Camera Chameleon was a song on SingStar, which came out on PS2 way back when. Uh-huh. And it was one of the first songs, and my family loves karaoke. So I would always sing Camera Chameleon, and I got SingStar Perfect singing on it every time. So it was kind of the testing the waters of being like openly gay with the family, and it was like there's no mistaking Boy George in the music video as a homo.
So
it was kind of like meant a lot that way.
Just to be clear, you do realize that getting 5 stars on SingStar does not actually mean you're a good singer.
No, I know.
Okay.
I know. It means I can go to the right
at the right time.
Just maintaining your pitch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. But for me, it meant a lot in that kind of social family space.
Right, yeah.
To kind of identify with that song.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sebastian, what was your song?
Should we not play
a few? No, we'll play the two when we play it.
Okay. So, I have the song that I would say has actually like defined my life the most and has actually changed my life the most. This is a very short answer. It has nothing to do with being gay. A friend of mine when I was 16 made a burned CD. Now, I didn't even know that technology existed when she handed me the burned CD, and I was just like, what is this? And she's like, I made this. And it's like, how? And it was, to be fair, though, burning your CDs was incredibly expensive at that time. But anyway, on that burned CD was Aphex Twin, Boy Girl. And it just absolutely blew my mind, because at that time, all I basically knew about was everything that was playing on the radio. My mom was a huge fan of progressive rock, and my stepfather didn't listen to anything that was written after 82. And so it was all fairly radio-friendly stuff. And then here I hear this song, and it just blew my mind. And I literally remember being confused as to what was and was not possible anymore. And it just, like, you've seen some of the movies that I enjoy. You've seen some of the books and bands that I like. Like, I really like abstract, really crazy stuff. And I really do attribute a lot of that just to that moment. But in terms of queerness, the music that I chose that will be played soon is Cornflake Girl by Tori Amos. Now, every generation of gay kids, gay boys, let's say, or people who will eventually turn into gay boys. They tend to fall into one of three camps when it comes to their favorite musician. And what those three camps are depends on the era. So for a while there, it was the most recent one would be you're a Beyonce kid or a Lady Gaga kid or a Lana Del Rey kid.
Really? Lana Del Rey?
A lot of gay kids love Lana Del Rey. But that sort of really that third crowd, because before Lana Del Rey, it was probably Imogen Heap. It was Kate Bush in the 80s. It was that weird...
Indigo Girls?
No. Because it was more about experimental, kind of playing with pop themes, but kind of off the beaten track. And that's exactly what Tori Amos was. So I remember when I was in high school, and this might date me a little bit, but
in
I had...
In 1947.
I had a lot of the closeted gay and bi kids that I knew were really into Tori Amos. And so I specifically chose Cornflake Girl, because when I was 18, I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but I ran away from home, as kids do, and I moved to Hong Kong, as nobody does. And one of my roommates was, in the modern terminology, basic. But we didn't have the term basic in 98. And Cornflake Girl is actually supposed to represent the concept of being basic. And so I hated this girl so much. And in my mind, she was just a cornflake girl, but she was just a basic girl, basically. And one of the things that I connected with my first boyfriend on, who I met in Hong Kong so strongly, he was Turkish, but Tori Amos was his favorite musician as well. So that's interesting. And he stole my Under the Pink album, which is what Cornflake Girl is from. And he never gave it back. I had to buy a new one. But he's like, nope, this is the cost of dating me. I get to keep this. And so we always connected over Tori Amos. And so it was just a whole bunch of stuff happening at the same time when I came out. And there was a kid I had he was a peer at the time, that I had a crush on in high school, and Tori Amos was his favorite musician as well. It was just a bunch of stuff. Oh, no, it was completely and totally unreciprocated. It was Tori Amos. And just Cornflake Girl because of all that other stuff. That's a good tune. It actually did a chart.
which always helps, for sure. So we're going to play out in just a few moments with the Boy George and Culture Club's Karma Chameleon. And then a major shift in gears with Tori Amos' Cornflake Girl.
Mm-hmm.
But before then, I want to really encourage all of our listeners to reach out to the Queer Songbook Orchestra, because their big project now is to take your stories from all across Canada and various communities, and create a show based around it. You know, so your story around the Tori Amos Cornflake Girl is a perfect example of what would go into the show.
Right.
And they would share the story and then play the song. And they're taking that show to all of the smaller communities across Canada, such as Abbotsford, which is where this show is broadcast, amongst many of the places, Bonnie Bay, over in the Salmon Arm, Kamloops,
Sault Ste. Marie,
and maybe even to some degree like St. John, New Brunswick, where it's getting there, but things need to improve.
I feel you're
still
being properly thorough if you end up in Letchek at some point.
Well, I don't know if they're going to get to it, but we'll find. We can encourage them to do so. But they're taking a show about queer Canadian experiences and queer Canadian songs, marrying them together and presenting those experiences within the kind of paradigm of song right. to these smaller communities that probably just don't get the exposure,
right,
don't get the conversations. So reach out to Queer Songbook Orchestra on Facebook and Twitter and even Instagram, and let them know what your song is and what your song means to you.
And if you have a song that you like that you think could fit into the show, feel free to contact us.
Absolutely. Actually, the Fundy Fringe Festival reached out to us and connected us to some New Brunswick queer musicians that we weren't aware of.
Awesome.
So if you think that there's some underrepresented talent in your town that could get the national exposure of a syndicated queer radio show, reach
and
out to us.
And has digital copies available online.
And has digital copies available online.
Because people tell us about bands all the time. We're like, awesome! And we look it up and we can barely even tell that they exist, unfortunately.
That is so true.
Because half the time they're just new bands. Very, very new bands don't have the exposure that they probably could have.
Absolutely.
Because they're new.
Tweet us, Talk Can Queer, or find us on Facebook as well, at Can Queer. And we'd love to hear from you. But that is all we have time for now. We're playing out with Karma Comedian by Boy George and Tori Amos' Cornflake Girl. I've been Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
Jake.
that was a good solution, hanging with the risen girls. She's gone to the other side, giving us a yo-heave-ho. Things are getting kind of gross, and I go at sleepy time. This is not really, this is not really happening. You've been